Hello and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. On today's show, we have a very special guest, Angela Tagg. She is one of our education people here at Blank Park Zoo and teaches lots of people about animals, and she's a great trainer of animals as well. And today we're going to talk about our non-lead hunting outreach program called Iowa Hunters Leading the Way. And so, Jesse, why don't you take the show and get us started?
Thanks, Ryan. I'm Jesse Lowry, the Director of Conservation and Research here at Blank Park Zoo, and I'm excited to have Angela Tagg with us. She's been my partner in crime here for this new project and many conservation projects here at the zoo. I always like to start off this show by talking just a little bit about the modern role of accredited zoos. There's 6,400 places to go see animals in human care in the U.S. There's only 230 or so accredited zoos and aquariums. So Blank Park Zoo is the top of the top, some of the best of the best, and our mission is to inspire an appreciation for the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. But I see us as a window to the wild, a place where we can invite audiences, our public, families, school kids, everybody to come in through our gates and have a fun, affordable day out at the zoo. We've surveyed our audience. We know that that's what they're looking for, to come and have an affordable, fun day out with their family. But while they're here, really inspire them to make a change, inspire them to take action to save wildlife, whether it's turtles in Iowa or giraffe in Namibia. Everybody can really do their part. And so one of the most important things about just coming to Blank Park Zoo is that a portion of every dollar that we make goes to save animals in the wild. And so just by visiting the zoo on a warm Sunday afternoon, just by riding the train, by getting a treat at the grill, you are helping to save animals. And this past year, we gave about $125,000 to In the Wild Conservation. And many of those programs are local, like our Plant Grow Fly project, working to encourage people to plant butterfly gardens in their yard to help our hardworking pollinating insects. But also to our upcycle program, where we go in and remove invasive plant species from local parks, helping to take care of our local environment, as well as our global campaigns. We support projects like Giraffe Conservation Foundation that works in Namibia and other countries in which giraffe occur in the wild, to really monitor their movements and help make sure they have the space and habitat and food resources that they need. And also International Rhino Foundation, taking care of rhinos in the wild. But we also breed endangered species through the SSP, or Species Survival Program. And of course, one of our most famous babies to date is Tumani, our eastern black rhino. And I'm going to always call her a baby, although she's 2 years old and a couple thousand pounds now. But eastern black rhinos, there's only 800 left in the world. And we've got two adults and an offspring here at Blank Park Zoo. And you can just see how much Tumani and our family of eastern black rhinos can really contribute to the global population. And so there's lots of different ways that we can work to save animals. But one thing, especially the past few years, that we've really started to concentrate on is working to build bridges with our local conservation community and to focus on local conservation issues, to use this awesome platform that we have as a zoo with our audience of 500,000 people a year to do some good. And when we were looking at our projects, especially our local projects, we realized that we didn't have very many programs that were partnering with some of our strongest advocates for resources, for natural resource conservation in the state. And that's those folks who are out hunting and fishing and using those natural resources. The hunting and fishing community are some of the strongest advocates, some of the original conservationists in the state of Iowa and around the country. And we wanted to really build bridges and work with those communities. And that's why we created our Iowa Hunters Leading the Way campaign. And so this past year, we got a REAP grant from the state of Iowa to increase knowledge and education about the effects of lead ammunition on wildlife. And our project especially focuses on the positive, just how easy it can be for folks to switch to non-lead ammunition. And I know that some listeners might not really understand, what lead ammunition is all about. So we're going to just unpack all of those different aspects of the project during this podcast today and kind of really get to the root of the problem. And I hope that everybody walks away today knowing exactly what they can do to help make sure there's no unintended consequences for hunting in Iowa. And so welcome again, Angela. So excited to have you with us today. And Angela is an educator here at the zoo, like Ryan said, and she works with K through 12 and teacher workshops and homeschools. And she's also extremely active in the conservation work of Blank Park Zoo. And I'll just have to say I've really, really been thankful for your help with this project, Angela.
Very good. You're more than welcome. This has been a fun one.
Yes, it has been a fun one. And, you know, when I was kind of thinking about this podcast and, you know, the order of that we should explain this project, because it is quite technical and complex, I was thinking, let's lead with just talking about the conservation efforts that hunting really has for our state. Why don't you start off a little bit with that topic, Angela?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that was refreshed in my mind as we worked through this project was just how far back Iowa itself, as well as the Midwest, and then also what's called the North American model for conservation goes, and how that affects today. And really what that is that hunters and those people who use natural resources are those people who are conservationists, just like you mentioned earlier. And for some people in modern times, that sounds maybe like it shouldn't mesh, but it really does, because these are people who for decades have wanted to go out and use natural resources, but they also understand the importance of preserving those so that you can go through and it'll be there for the future. So this goes back, I'm sure, even farther than what we're going to talk today. But going back to the 1930s with people, 30s and 40s, with people like Ding Darling, who is a name that pops up in Iowa conservation, but also Aldo Leopold. As a side note, the skunk that I train here at the zoo is named Aldo. But these particular people helped to lead, along with some others, a national effort that basically started or continued conservation efforts. And through some of their national efforts, they created the duck stamp program, which a lot of people are familiar with. They also created wildlife research units that helped to understand how wildlife traveled and where they occurred, as well as how our impact did just that, what our impact was on that wildlife. They also created something or assisted in creating something called the Pittman-Robertson Federal Aid and Wildlife Act. And basically what that is for hunters, every time you buy a hunting license or a hunting tag, a portion of that money goes back to conservation. And that's really what we're here to talk about as we go through this project today. But it shows just how deep conservation has been in the life of a lot of hunters.
Yeah, and a lot of people just don't know, just to add on to that, Angela, that both game and non-game species conservation in the state of Iowa and throughout the Midwest is funded, just to take it a step further, is funded by the hunters and anglers, and not just taxes on hunting licenses and permits, but also on firearms and ammunition, and all of those things are taxed, and that's a lot of the money that goes to conserve, like I said, both game and non-game species. And we've got some famous folks here from Iowa, and Ding Darling and Aldo Leopold, of course, adding to that really conservation heritage. And so hunters will be funding and supporting conservation and helping to self-regulate to make sure that there are populations of these species that they would like to utilize far into the future. But also, I like to remind people of just the wildlife conservation aspect of hunting itself. Obviously, Iowa used to be covered in over 90% of the tall grass prairie. It was one of the most biologically diverse areas in the whole world. And we used to have predators, and we don't anymore. And so if you care about any kind of wildlife habitat, including pollinator habitat, unless we have regulated hunting of deer, there's not going to be any habitat for any of the native animals left because the predators have been taken out. And so there would be a massive overpopulation of deer, which would ensue some suffering for deer as well. And so there's so many different ways to look at this, the contribution to conservation of hunters and anglers throughout the last century or so. And it's just really exciting as conservationists at a zoo and for non-game species as well to really build those bridges and start connecting with the hunting community. Because I think if you look at the demographics of the state of Iowa and conservationists in the state of Iowa, I bet the biggest group is going to be those natural resource users.
Oh, I would definitely agree with that, whether it be, as you said, hunters or anglers. But, you know, they provide, by those taxed items, they provide resources that the rest of us get to go out and be a part of. So when I go hiking in a county or a state park, I really do have to thank that community for keeping some of that heritage going and some of those lands going that we would otherwise not have, because those particular areas are also funded by those taxes that come in.
So we're hoping with our project, which is called Iowa Hunters Leading the Way, that folks in this community will continue their conservation heritage by choosing non-lead ammunition when they go out and hunt. So before we get to that, though, let's kind of unpack exactly why we're talking about lead ammunition and how it can be harmful to wildlife. And so if we kind of break it down, you know, a lot of folks listening today, I'm sure, are hunters and know a lot about this, but we'll just go into a little bit of detail to get other folks kind of caught up a little bit. Most hunting in Iowa, one of the most popular types of hunting is deer hunting. And most deer hunting in Iowa, folks use a shotgun. The popular ammunition for a shotgun is a slug. And when folks go out and they hunt a deer, the slug, which is also called the projectile, when it impacts the deer, it fragments into tiny little pieces, losing some of its weight. And if it's made, you know, and it fragments along the wound channel. Can you help kind of explain that a little bit in some different words, Angela?
Yeah. So when it fragments or breaks up into tiny pieces, I think a lot of people, when they go through and they look at that deer later or the carcass later, they're just looking for the larger pieces. But there are these, what I'm going to call almost microscopic, although some of them can be a little larger than that, fragments or pieces that you're not aware is still there. And through that wound channel, those fragments can actually go 18 inches to either side of that channel. And so it's not just that wound channel that somebody needs to be concerned about. It is, like I said, somewhere in the neighborhood of 18 inches on either side. And do you want to tell the audience what the highest number of fragments for a lead bullet might possibly break up into?
So they did some studies, and the reason that we know that the fragmentation of the projectile creates this snowstorm type of fragmentation is because folks have done scientific research where they will take gut piles and carcasses and X-ray them. And of course, lead is metallic, and it'll show up like the North Star on an X-ray. And so they have found with bullets, rifle bullets, there's a lot more folks in the country use rifles than they do shotguns.
Correct.
Up to 420 fragments in one gut pile. And so, you know, it's perfectly fine to field dress your game and leave the gut pile other, you know, parts that you're not going to use in the field. And this becomes a valuable food source for many animals like scavengers. And hunters really do try to get the lead out before they leave it in the field. But like you said, some of these pieces are microscopic, even powdery, and are literally not detectable. And so inadvertently, some of this lead is being left in the field. And so this is something that we have found through this project and heard from our partners and experts that a lot of folks just don't really realize exactly how much fragmentation can happen and how far those fragments can travel. And so this is really the first opportunity for us to help spread these messages of education is just to talk about fragmentation and how that's inadvertently left in the field.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that is the first line of education, because, again, many people are aware that the slug may mushroom and it may break off into a few larger chunks, but they're not aware that those tiny pieces can go undetected.
And some folks ask, well, can we just bury the gut pile? You know, a lot of times in the wintertime, the ground's so hard anyway, it's really impossible. But it doesn't solve the problem. Scavenging animals can unearth these, re-exposing that lead for consumption.
Yeah,
and
there,
so, sorry. Go ahead.
There's a lot of animals, you know, they're literally built to unearth things. That's what nature built them to do. So when you talk about some of the different canine species that we would have in our local area and our state, like foxes, coyotes, etc., they're capable of digging up quite a bit and fairly deep, and so are other scavengers. And so, you know, not only are they capable of digging it up, but their noses and their senses allow them to find those gut piles, even though we thought we did a great job
and a lot
putting
of
them down in there.
Exactly right. And a lot of people don't think of raptors, especially bald eagles, are national symbol since the late 1700s as a scavenger. But they've got amazing eyesight, and in the wintertime when other food is scarce, they're going to hone in on those gut piles, and they're going a very, very tiny piece of lead can really, really be dangerous to a raptor like a bald eagle. And so everybody knows lead is bad. It's a toxic metal.
Yep.
It has adverse effects on the nervous and reproductive systems of mammals and birds. Doesn't matter what kind of animal it is. It's going to be dangerous. There's really no safe level of lead. So we don't want to be leaving lead in the environment. And we want to make sure that that's not in the meat as well. And so, you know, lead affects animals who will scavenge these gut piles. About half of all bald eagles that are sent to rehabbers in the state of Iowa are lead poison. And it just takes a tiny little bit. So this is something that's pretty simple that we can avoid. But before we go into taking care of the stumbling blocks on how to switch to non-lead ammunition, can we talk about the condor story just a little bit?
Let's do it.
Okay, so we have many partners, over 30 partners that have worked with us on Iowa Hunters Leading the Way. Just diverse experts from lots of different fields, like academic fields and agencies and hunting organizations and county conservation boards. But a couple of our partners, Leland Brown from Oregon Zoo, as well as Chris Parrish from the Peregrine Fund, have really been helping us along the way because they've done this work for a really long time. And Chris has worked with California condors for a long time. And what I love about the story of the California condor and how it relates to the issue of lead ammunition is that many times you cannot study an animal at both the individual level and the population level. But we can with condors, unfortunately, because there's so few, but they're all radio collared. And so, Angela, tell us about how that gives us such a clear picture of how animals, scavenging animals, can be affected by lead left in the environment.
Right. So through the project of releasing fledglings, condors, and then going back and checking in on the adults through that tagging system, they've been able to, each time they either recapture an adult or right before they release a new one, they do blood tests. And those blood tests tell them whether this animal has ever been, I shouldn't say ever been, but in the current time frame, whether they show lead levels. And blood lead levels stay within the system for around 14 days. And so you have a fairly short window of time, and it's kind of, yes, they can show amounts because we know lead from ammunition is actually a different isotope type than maybe lead that would be found as, let's say, a natural vein of lead in soil or in geological areas.
And so just to unpack that a bit further, so when they test the condors for lead, they can tell that it was ammunition?
Correct, because it's something called isotopes. And so it basically breaks it down into a unique chemical fingerprint, if you want to think of it that way. And so lead out of ammunition is a different type than what would be lead found naturally, such, like I said, that would be in geological areas. So those isotopes that they come up with, or those lead levels, tell them, like I said, whether that animal has lead currently in their system. But kind of the scary part is that's just one way of telling. And lead stays about 14 days in the blood, but it stays a lot longer in the other systems. And so just because you might see a low level or a zero level doesn't mean that they've never had exposure. And so that's something that we have to take into account. But back to the condors, basically they were able to track these birds. And the fun part of the condors is that we learned is that condors actually watch ravens. And so when ravens come in or they start seeing raven activity, they know, the condors know, that dinner is served because ravens come in first to a carcass or to a gut pile left in the field, and then the condors are going to literally swoop in and kind of take that over. And so just through that process and through some camera traps, they actually could watch condors scavenge on these gut piles or carcasses left in the field.
Because every time one of the condors was caught for any thing at all, because they needed to put a new battery in the collar, every single right. condor is monitored to this degree to help save this critically endangered species, they would test for lead.
Correct.
And every single time a condor would be in the same spot for several days, they would go in, send a biologist in, and if that condor had perished, they would be able to connect it to different areas and different gut piles. And so it was such an amazing opportunity to look at both the population level and individual levels. And I think about half of condors that are lost to lead poisoning. And we can't do that with other populations. So for example, bald eagles, we know how many bald eagles go into wildlife rehabbers in the state every year. We know that the percentage that are lead poisoned is about 50%, but there's more that are lost in the field and never recovered. And so what a right. great opportunity. And as scientists, we can't say what's happening with one species is definitely happening with another, but it can give us hints to investigate. Well, if this is happening with a condors, we're getting sick bald eagles. What other animals are being affected by lead left in the environment? And how can we help educate and get this message out? And so folks know how to avoid unintended consequences of conservation hunting.
Well, and the key to the condor study, as well as a couple of other studies, is they were pairing the increased lead levels that they were finding in the field to hunting seasons. And so, you know, they were starting to see certain spikes during certain times of the year, but they weren't sure. This is, you know, a decade or more ago. They weren't sure why those spikes were happening. And as they kind of researched it and tracked it, it was pairing up very tightly with certain hunting seasons in different areas of the country, in Wyoming, as well as in Arizona and Utah, where condors are at, and then in Wyoming, where they were looking at some other species to track. And so extrapolating from that and the fact that we do know bald eagles go into rehabbers with lead levels, and some of those are fatal lead levels, we certainly can extrapolate that those same kind of things are probably happening here in Iowa as well.
And just one more quick note before we move on, that when we do test the blood of animals who have been exposed to lead, it's a snapshot, just like you said. Yep. The period that it'll show up on test results is about 14 to 17 days. We don't know if the level that you got is on the way down or if it's still on the way up. And it's not black or white that the animal either dies from lead poisoning or it's okay. You know, any type of lead in the body will affect the animal and how efficiently it's able to get food and process food, how high they're able to fly, and all of these things that we have yet to understand how it affects both individual animals and at a population level.
Right.
But I want to make sure we have plenty of time to talk about solutions. What can folks do to make sure that when they go out and they take their family out on this conservation activity of hunting and fishing, which we haven't talked about
there
in Iowa,
yeah.
That there's no unintended consequences. And so really how we talk about it is, how can you maximize performance and conservation with non-lead ammunition? And so let's talk about, what are some of the challenges that folks have to switching to non-lead ammunition?
Yeah, because the simple answer is switching your ammunition over to non-lead. And there are a variety of non-lead types, whether it be copper or bismuth or tin. It depends upon what kind of gun you're using, and then consequently then what kind of ammunition you're searching for. So some of the challenges can be honestly just finding it, because here in Iowa most of them are shotguns that we use, especially for deer hunting, like you said earlier, and it can be a bit challenging to find non-lead choices within different stores, but it's out there. And one of the challenges is that it's not always clearly labeled. So going back to rifle ammunition rather than shotgun, you may look at something and it looks like it's copper, but it may just be copper jacketed. And so you need to kind of educate yourself as to what language you're looking for on those boxes and ask. You know, if you're not sure, go ahead and ask the retailer, or even go ahead and ask the manufacturers if you can get that far.
So luckily, we have developed and are further developing a resource on the zoo's website. You can go to blankparkzoo.com or iowaleadingtheway.com to find a list of retailers, both locally and online, to find non-lead ammunition to match your equipment and hunt. It can be a little tricky. Don't wait until the day before hunting season starts. Make sure you have a little bit of extra time to sight in your gun and figure out what brand you like best. But it is out there, and with increased demand, accessibility will become easier. Let's talk about the price a little bit.
Yeah. We understand that sometimes using non-lead can be a little more expensive. And however, we're not saying that you should use non-lead if you're practicing at the range, but you will need to go to the range, like Jesse said, to sight in your gun, to get used to that type of new ammunition. And so, you know, there may be some upfront costs to it, but once you're out to the hunt, you know, it's not going to be that much more expensive. We're talking a few dollars per box is all. And so it's not that much expensive, more expensive once you get started with it.
Usually the non-lead that we have found is comparable to the price of premium lead. And so you can kind of think about that way. And performance, we have heard really fantastic things throughout Iowa as well as the Midwest and nationwide about the performance. And there's the options, and the performance is just getting better and better and better. But I think that mostly folks just aren't used to using this kind of ammunition, and they're not sure exactly what to get for their firearm, and they're not exactly sure how they perform. And so really the thing to do is to find what matches your firearm and your hunt and get out there and try it and figure it out.
Yep.
And
so go to your range.
Exactly. We will also be working to plan some ammunition trials that folks can come, as well as perhaps incentivizing the purchase and use of non-lead ammunition. We want to really take all of these challenges and kind of, you know, figure out solutions for each of these challenges. But it really all boils down to that we've started this project to partner with hunters as the conservation leaders that they are in the state. And we're excited also about the North American partnership. And we encourage everybody to look online about that partnership as well. It's a national collaborative effort. But please go on our website. We've got brochures we can share. We've got some amazing displays that were funded by REAP. And we would love to share this campaign with you. And Angela, thank you so much for all your work on this project and for being here with us today.
We need to get the word out.
We sure do. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, thanks for that information. And if you want to learn more, go to blankparkzoo.com or iowaleadingtheway.com, and you can learn all about this project we've been talking about this half hour. And if you want to learn more about Blank Park Zoo, you can head over to the website and learn all you want about Blank Park Zoo. We'll talk to you next time on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.